Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Chris Hutton. Let's get into the news of today, and the first story we're going to be talking about is reporting in City Press over the, quite frankly, the abandonment of South Africa's soldiers in the Eastern DRC. So ever since the military defeat that our soldiers suffered in DRC, government has been saying essentially that it's intending to bring home these soldiers who were deployed on a peacekeeping mission to the DRC to support the government of the DRC against Rwandan-backed rebels. Now, the process for withdrawing those soldiers has in fact begun. The heavy equipment is being carted out of the country significant amounts. But according to City Press, the soldiers are being left behind, at least for now, due to a lack of funds. Approximately half of the military's equipment in Goma and Sake has already been transported by truck to Tanzania. And there have been a small group of soldiers taken out of the country. So there's some indications that some have an additional group has left since this report was written. However, the vast majority have not been picked up because, according to a senior officer involved in coordinating the repatriation, quote, our feedback is that SADC has not hired the buses and we are also not aware of any flights. A frustrated military officer said, quote, the problem is we are completely in the dark while we just see how the equipment becomes less and less. We are not going anywhere. The bigger problem is how to explain to one's subordinate troops when you yourself don't even know. It's not pleasant for anyone to know the equipment is apparently more important than the people, especially not given the circumstances under which we have been living since January. The officer continued, we sometimes get something to eat once a day, and that is thanks to the generosity of other contingents that are part of the United Nations mission. Some of the countries are now sharing their own emergency supplies with us while we are literally dependent on mercy. How does one explain this to your subordinates and keep them calm while tempers just want to boil over all the time? The officer even said that some of the soldiers are threatening to protest at the headquarters of the mission in DRC, which he described as being a potential disgrace for South Africa. Chris, I mean, I suspect that our soldiers will be brought home in short order, but this has just been a debacle from beginning to end. The lack of air support, the non-functioning equipment, the lack of clarity about why the soldiers are being deployed there from the president. This has been an absolute humiliation for our military and has put the lives of our soldiers at risk completely unnecessarily and without proper support. What's your take on this, Chris?
Yeah, I can't imagine. I don't know if you can, or maybe a viewer, being in this kind of situation where I'm not saying, you know, in any military engagement in a foreign country, there's no guarantees. There shouldn't be an assumption of that sort of thing. But at the very least, there should be a guarantee of clear communication and basic logistics support from your government, from your head of state, from your commander-in-chief, from the head of your Department of Defense or whatever it is in your particular country. And these things just haven't been the case since before this particular deployment for the SANDF, specifically as part of this wider quote-unquote peacekeeping force. So I can only imagine being one of these soldiers and just what it does to South Africa's standing in the region in terms of where it used to be versus now, where if you talk about exerting force, military force, questions around sovereignty and border security, this is, I guess, the quintessential case study of that South Africa doesn't have a lot of these capacities anymore. So the spillover effects and consequences for things like border security, for projecting force, for using that, the threat of that credible force in other geopolitical and diplomatic foreign policy engagements is worn away and lost over time. It has serious effects, I think, on the South African government qua being a government, not just for the ANC, but that sort of idea of a monopoly on force, having a national defense force, being able to deploy it effectively. It undermines, I think, even more so than it has been up until this point, the South African government as a government, as being able to control its borders, be able to secure its people, and to influence things just in its own region. So South Africa loves to talk about being this moral player on the global stage, but you need to back that up in some ways. If you can't back it up economically, as we can't do, you would hope to fall back to something so like a military capacity, but that's also now being shown up over time.
And just absolutely shocking state of affairs, and of course the damage to our ability to project hard power. I don't know how South Africa is going to have any ability to influence conflicts and peacekeeping efforts are on in the African continent until these issues are resolved. All right, let's move on to our next story. And this is that the ratings agency Moody has said that Transnet is in a lot of financial trouble. Now, this we know, but they say specifically that Transnet, the big state-owned enterprise for doing logistics, has only 3 months of cash in the bank, and basically it's going to need another bailout. This has been causing angst in financial markets, as some of the reporting for Business Live has put it. Moody says that it has been forced as a result to downgrade the rating of Moody's. Chris, is this a big deal?
It is, because such a downgrade would mean higher costs for Transnet on its debt. So just as for a country, if your sovereign credit rating is lowered by these entities, over time, it weakens your credibility, the credibility amongst investors and those who give you credit that you will be able to pay back that debt or that credit. And also, I think it just wears away at any potential progress that maybe Transnet and the government thought the entity was making. So two things to highlight here, especially is we've had over the last 6 months or so continued promises by, not least of which, the Minister of Transport, Barbara Creasy, talking about getting private sector players involved in logistics, specifically in ports and in rail. But as Moody's highlights, Transnet isn't making enough progress in getting these programs up onto any sort of credible level where that private sector investment gets involved. So it's one thing to talk about it and promise it, but if you don't get these things actually implemented, it chips away at your credibility in terms of these reform plans. We should also add, because Transnet has such a crushing debt mountain, never mind a debt burden, it is not spending what it should be doing on CapEx, which is to say on infrastructure, on maintaining the infrastructure that it has and on building new infrastructure. That in turn impacts its ability to generate revenue, to collect more from its various customers, and to then help service its debt. So if you're just spending on salaries, number one, and number two, on debt repayments, you're not spending on the kind of infrastructure that you need to be seeing. So a little surprised that Moody's has made this announcement. I think for Transnet and the board, for the minister, for the GNU, it's yet another signal. Not that they should need any more, but another signal that, yes, it's great to talk about reform and wanting higher growth. And President Ramaphosa and big business have talked about getting 3% growth. You're not going to get there without just these basic areas of logistics and electricity being fit for purpose, having competitive markets, and functioning well. I know that doesn't serve vested interests. Transnet is very good from that point of view for serving vested interests in politics and amongst unions and some bigger businesses who get some of the maintenance contracts. But it doesn't serve the sort of trade competitiveness and trade infrastructure of the country as a whole. It's another sign that hopefully a signal that the GNU takes on board and uses to shake up those vested interests, but I don't think it comes as much of a surprise.
Oh, exactly right. And let's talk a little bit about what the consequences on ordinary people are of this kind of thing. When you don't have a logistics system that works, you don't have an economy that works, and when you don't have an economy that works, frustration, rage, and disorder breaks out. In Deep Kloof today, the edge of Soweto, there was a service delivery protest demanding basic services that got very violent. Protesters blocked parts of the N12 highway in Gauteng, and police had to be deployed to the scene to try and sort things out. Two people have been killed. One of the deceased was one of those waste recycler guys who was hit by a truck that then crashed into a transformer, leaving the area without electricity. Another person was killed when a motorist trying to drive around the protest hit into someone and accidentally killed them. It's really bad stuff. A truck driver interviewed in, I think it was Times Live, Ronald Mbalulana, who said the incident occurred this early this morning. He was on the N12 interchange when a group of people appeared from the bushes, went towards him, started hitting his truck with objects. He said, quote, "It was really scary. I feared for my life. So I got off the truck and ran for my life, because when incidents like these happen, sometimes they kill the drivers. My two colleagues who were left in the car were beaten up, everything taken from us, our phones, our keys, including our lunch." Another truck driver who went through the same area said, "We received an earlier report that a truck was looted and the driver was assaulted." So, you know, obviously none of that's acceptable whatsoever, and the police must find the perpetrators. And, you know, the lines between protest and kind of just straightforward banditry are being really blurred here. But the bottom line is we're seeing, you know, governance failures here. People have decided that they need to protest the lack of services in their area. We're seeing the fact that law enforcement is not able to get a proper handle on these things, at least until damage has been done. You know, Chris, what do you make of this? What does it say about where we are currently as a country?
Yeah, I suppose it's indicative of the situation in which many South African citizens find themselves, where successive governments would have told them, you know, the growth will come, service delivery will come, jobs will come, those bread and butter issues that you tell us time after time directly, or in polling that is such as done by the Institute of Race Relations. These are your priorities, but we're not gonna deal with those issues. We're gonna keep talking about expropriation of property without compensation, about the NHI, about things that are never gonna be delivered in any case, but also if they were, they would worsen your material interests. So not to justify this sort of action when it happens, but this situation continues to permeate. It shouldn't be a surprise if something similar to July 2021 occurs again, because the ingredients are there for that sort of thing, those frustrations, the frustration with the status quo. We highlighted this this morning in our latest risk alert at the CRA, looking at the latest unemployment numbers, where the percentage of those aged 15 to 34 who are not in employment, education, or training was at 45.1% in the first quarter of this year. That's up from 43.8% a year ago. And in the 15 to 24 age group, unemployment was 62.4%, up from 50.3% a decade earlier. Now, that is in the context of a growing population, but relatively, just a greater and greater proportion of young South Africans, especially, who, number one, either fall out of education, and when they do make it through grade 12 into university, they're not necessarily equipped with the right skills, and the level of education doesn't equip them, never mind to compete in their own country for ever fewer jobs, but to compete globally in a more globalized and interconnected world. And those frustrations then will find their outlet in things like service delivery protests and other forms of protest action. We couple this, of course, with the proportion of South Africans who choose not to vote, as the share of those who are able to vote are of voting age. That has also increased in the last few general election cycles. So where South Africans have the right to vote, but they don't feel that any party warrants them turning out on election day, and then they resort to other means to try and effect some kind of change, to make an impact on the world around them. I think that's that little surprise that this kind of thing happens. And perhaps many have become too desensitized to it, because it does happen on a daily occurrence. It takes these kinds of stories to get your attention again. But this is the I know we don't like this particular phraseology, but this is the lived reality or the lived experience of millions of South Africans who are continually promised better quality of life, higher growth rates, etc. But the state doesn't deliver. And then the state also inhibits the private sector through laws, regulations, other policies from creating the sort of investment and job opportunities that South Africans would want.
Right. I mean, we really see every day in South Africa the real human cost of a lack of economic growth, and this story is intimately connected to that. The other issue, of course, is that the police service just doesn't work properly. But, you know, this is these two problems go hand in hand in some cases. You need money to fix the cops, but at the same time, you also need to fix the cops to help protect the economy and assets and ensure there's order and stability and all that sort of thing. But, yeah, These service delivery protests have become a feature of South African political life, and we should not expect them to go anywhere until we have begun to make some progress on economic conditions in this country. All right, that's all the time we have for today. We hope you found the show interesting. Just a note, you may notice if you are a regular watcher of the show that we are switching away from the longer episodes on Monday. We are now going to be doing the Daily Friend Wrap short episodes on Monday going forward. So that means we won't have the live broadcast. We'll have these recorded ones that go out sometime after 5, usually around 5. We will be instead having more experimental, longer programs on Friday. So if you like watching us live, tune in then. Anyway, hope you all enjoyed the show today, and we'll see you all tomorrow on the Daily Friend Show. Cheers. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.